Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, here in the Zoom studio at KHOI with my co-host Pat Schlarbaum and our guests who are gathered in our virtual studio.
Yes, Susan, welcome. Great to have you on the screen. In these extraordinary times, the KHOI community is preparing a series of programs to share with our listeners how our community is coping with the difficulties of sheltering in place and for finding the resources in our community to care for each other. Our live guest today, through the power of Zoom, will be talking about things that affect all of us. Susan Quiastas. Guest will be Sheila Schofer, director of the Ames Public Library, with ideas for staying connected and engaged during self-isolation. Later, we'll hear from clinical psychologist Suzanne Zilber about ways to cope with anxiety, as well as the difficulties of interruptions to normal life. But before Sheila and Suzanne come on, you have a reflection from Carolyn Raffensperger, which will be a feature of Local Talk Wednesday. Carolyn Raffensperger is the director of the Science and Environmental Health Foundation, living here in Ames, is a very strong advocate and voice for the environment, but also for humanity. So we'll catch up to Carolyn earlier this week. How is the day for Carolyn Raffensperger?
It is a good day. I had spent a lot of my month preceding this moment in time preparing for a long day in hibernation in my home. And the rhythm of the day changes substantially when you're housebound. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if other people are experiencing the same thing, which is that time, it seems to bend a little bit. The days are harder to somebody asked me what I did yesterday, and I couldn't quite remember. You know, there was nothing that stood out amongst the rhythm of the day, which has changed since we began staying in one place and not having more social encounters. Mm-hmm. And so I've been curious about how we experience time and what we do with it.
Oh.
And how it relates to uncertainty. So that was the topic that I wanted to raise with you. And, you know, one of the thoughts that came to mind is that we have an extraordinarily uncertain future. And we do not know when the virus is going to subside and whether it will come roaring back in the fall. That's the prediction of some epidemiologists. We don't know how weather events are going to overlay the virus. We know that some mayors and others along the Missouri River have said that they're now facing two crises. They're facing the flooding and the aftermath of last year's flooding and the coronavirus at the same time, mm-hmm. and that it's difficult. And so we know that we are facing what is, in all likelihood, a difficult future, but it's uncertain. And mm-hmm. the uncertainty, I think, magnifies both the stillness of this moment. It's harder to see the days change when they all look the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I thought we actually need a phonology of pandemics and quarantines, that they're different than our normal day-to-day routine.
Yes, we have certainly embarked on a new direction of it's changing our lives, and we're allowing it to foster some new habits, but habits that will hopefully carry throughout the rest of our existence. When you mentioned a lot of preparation, in some ways, I think there has been a philosophy or thinking that there was going to be something of this magnitude in our lives sooner or later, and now we're trying to learn to adapt.
We're trying to learn to adapt, and we have different time horizons that are before us. We have the very short term, you know, do we have enough food for the week or for 2 weeks? When will this be up? What's going to happen to the economy? And then we have the longer term. What will we emerge as a country, as a town, as a people out of this? So we have these different horizons that we need to attend to. And I suspect that community members have different capacities for looking at those. You know, those who are in crisis right now, who don't know how they're going to pay this month's rent, have a kind of struggle that does not lend itself to looking long term. One of the things I think about with who can look long term and who can understand those emerging patterns are really the elders. And when the lieutenant governor of, I believe it was Texas, said that grandparents were willing to sacrifice themselves for their grandchildren's economic future, and that the grandparents were willing to be exposed and die so that their grandkids could have a portfolio, didn't ring very well for, I think, most cultures that have valued the elder. And it brought to mind a quote by Barry Lopez, the fabulous writer of natural history. He's written a book called Arctic Dreams. He's written about wolves. He's written extraordinary pieces about the attention to the natural world. And one of the things that he said to me at dinner when he had come to Iowa State to do a reading and a public talk was he said that elders are responsible for climate and younger people for the weather. So the weather is, do you need mittens today? Is it the time to plant the garden? Are the robins back? And that the elders are for that longer term perspective. How do we set the stage so that future generations have a livable future? So in contrast to that lieutenant governor who thought that our elders are expendable, I think that one of the things that we need to do during this time is ask our elders how they got through hard times. It just seems to me that they knew how to prepare. Winter in Iowa or other northern climates, we anticipated that they would be hard. We anticipated that you would need a lot of canned goods on those shelves to get you through. You would need to have the wood stored for your wood stove. And right now, I think our elders can help guide us with the stories, with their own experiences of hard times. What have they lived through, and what is their best advice for us in managing something that is difficult, truly difficult? So the younger folks are, you know, trying really hard to figure out how to feed their kids, how to homeschool them right now, how to protect those who are immune suppressed or whatever else. And our elders have a responsibility, I think, to share with us, and one of those sacred responsibilities that they can share with us, that hard-won wisdom that we so desperately need.
Our elders sacrificed so much, and now we can see how they accrued that sense of budgeting and restraint.
Restraint and frugality.
What is a good word for you today?
I think that there are two words, one that I will introduce towards a little bit, but I wanted to explore the idea of uncertainty. And in a serendipitous moment, I think before you began recording, you talked about your niece's work on salmon. And we're faced with all this uncertainty. We don't know how this is going to unfold. We don't know what our lives are going to look like in 6 months or a year. And so how do you manage uncertainty? So the work that I've been doing and I've talked about in these conversations with you, Pat, around the precautionary principle, the fulcrum of the precautionary principle, which really is about taking action to prevent harm in the future, the fulcrum of that is uncertainty. In a lot of the work that I've done, we don't know the outcome of whatever kinds of actions that we might take to prevent climate change. We don't know the outcome of the Dakota Access Pipeline. We do know that we've increased the risk of harm, the threat of harm. So the question is, what do you do in the face of scientific uncertainty to prevent harm or to reduce the likelihood that you're going to face really difficult times? And there are fabulous marine biologists. I use that word twice, fabulous. They're smart, and they explain things in interesting ways. And man named, his last name was Ludwig, wrote about the marine fisheries off the coast of Peru, I believe. It was quite a few years ago, probably 20 some odd years ago. So they were talking about how you manage those fisheries so that they are sustainable. And he came up with this really interesting list of how you do that. And one of the things he said that was so enchanting was, you favor actions that are robust to uncertainty.
Oh.
And he said hedge. And so looking at what we're doing now, that we need to favor actions that are going to increase the sustainability of our individual homes, our community and aims, the larger world around us. So how do we do that? Well, one of the things we know is that if our neighbor is okay, we're more likely to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
We know that if the pollinators are okay, we're more likely to be okay. So that we favor actions that are robust to uncertainty, that increase the chance that the dark times are going to be less dark, less difficult. You know, if you want those fisheries to be available, then you take care of them and that you show restraint. And years ago, I convened a group of biologists to look at how we would apply the precautionary principle to mesocarnivores, those mid-sized carnivores, grizzly bears, and salmon, of all things. And one of the questions I asked at that workshop that we held in Montana was, how do the salmon deal with uncertainty? Because salmon are one of the most interesting species ever. You know, they're freshwater, they're saltwater, they have this interesting life history. They have a life cycle that doesn't look like, you know, a lot of other species.
Yeah.
And so how do they deal with uncertainty, with changes in weather, with changes in their streams, their home streams that they haven't visited for, you know, however long, a year or 2 years, since they swam? How long is it before the salmon come back to their home stream?
Oh, I think it's 3 or 4 years, but
yeah.
They exhibit such boundless energy to return from which they came.
There's some uncertainty in that. Is that stream going to look the same? Is it going to have been scoured out by huge storm? And so thinking about how other species deal with the disruptions in their system, how they maintain some resilience, that seems to me to be a question. I wondered how you thought that peregrine falcons or osprey deal with uncertainty.
Well, they have an innate ability to survive, and they have talents, or they have the ability to prosper in their circumstances. And ironically, they had about everything they needed, but they had pollution that they could not overcome. And it was pollution that was really an undoing. And I think I see where we're going with this.
So the question is, what have we introduced into our environment that we cannot overcome? And there are at least two things that come to my mind that have reduced our resilience and our capacity to choose actions that are robust to uncertainty. The first is the rampant use of fossil fuels and the increase in disruptions to our climate have made it much more difficult for us to survive. We've seen the floods in Iowa repeatedly. We've seen the changes in precipitation patterns, in heat, shorter winters. You know, we've seen a huge amount of disruption, which in turn disrupts the natural world on which we depend. And the second thing that we've done is we've destroyed the wild world, that we have created a place where bats no longer are at home. The pollinators are no longer at home. We've destroyed most of the big carnivores that would have kept the deer in check. All of those things that make a community rich and lively and in some ways in harmony. I want to use the word harmony rather than balance, because humans seem to think that since there's 1 acre of the wild left, that balance is that they get half and the wild gets the other half, and then divide that half again until there's postage stamp left of the wild. But I keep coming back to the bat, because the bat, that great messenger, was the reservoir, the coronavirus, or one of them. There's some suspicion that it was, might have been the pangolin as well. But when you disrupt the natural world, all of the things that bats did for and with us, eating all of the mosquitoes, that we are going to create the same thing in terms of the pollution and the DDT that did in those beautiful osprey and other birds that are the giants of the sky. So it seems to me that we have been given a chance in this year for a hitting a reset button and looking at those things and realigning our lives with all that would make us resilient. So we started talking about time earlier in this conversation. And, you know, so salmon have 3 or 4 years before they go home to their spawning grounds and complete that cycle of leaving their bodies to fertilize, you know, things for the grizzly bear, that whole big cycle of life. And it seems to me that we have a year now in which to rethink this and reset how we understand our relationship to each other and our relationship to the natural world. The reason I say a year is because the life cycle of the virus in our human population is, you know, probably die out summer, that's the best guess, and come back in the fall. So we're going to have these waves of impact. And a fascinating idea in the Old Testament is the concept of the year of Jubilee. And in the year of Jubilee, which is every 50 years, there was a year of forgiving all the debts, of freeing the slaves, and giving the earth a rest. And I wonder if we don't need to declare a full year of Jubilee. You know, so many of our friends and allies and the young people have incurred massive school debt because of the way we structured loans that are very different than when I went to college a long time ago. And, you know, so my generation came out without much school debt, and we have left that to, you know, the debt now to this younger generation. We have left medical debt. And these things that no longer allow for resilience and to bend with the storms just seem to me to be things that we can rethink and reset so that we emerge out of this with resilience and wholeness and health. Yeah. And my hope is that we can survive this with some beauty. We can come out healthy, healthier, and that we can find the conditions for all of us to thrive, not just survive.
Okay. Thank you so much, Carolyn.
Thank you, Pat.
In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Local Talk, and I'm one of your hosts, Susan Franzen. My co-host, Pat Sharbaum, has been talking with Carolyn Raffensperger about the pandemic and how we are adapting our lives. Susan Piazza, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, has brought in our next guest. Why don't you introduce her, Susan?
It's good to be here. And again, thank you for letting us have this opportunity to update our citizens on what's been happening with the City of Ames. As you know, we've been transforming the way that we provide programs and services to the citizens of Ames. And one of the best ways that I can showcase that is with Sheila Shofar, our Ames Public Library Director, and some of the innovative ways that they are developing to continue to serve residents.
Sheila?
Yes.
I've been getting to look at your face and not hear your voice for about 20 minutes, so now it's great to talk with you. The library is officially closed, yet there's a lot going on and many staff coming into the building. What are they doing?
So staff are working on all kinds of projects, one of the most important being developing some online content that we can share out with you. So we are keeping our website up to date, you know, having frequently asked questions if anyone has them, and creating a lots of online content that we're posting on our Facebook page, on our website page. So like we're doing live story times on Facebook. That's fun. We're doing book recommendations. So you'll see some cute videos that have, you know, all the familiar faces, your favorite librarians there highlighting their recommended books. They did a nice mystery theme the other day that had some children, some teens, some adult favorite mystery books. And I thought it was great. You could really, I know those librarians well, and their personalities really come through in video. So I think if you're missing your friendly faces at the library, they are still there for you, just virtually.
Yeah, I would just add that we have a history at the City of Ames of embracing new technology. And so a lot of the faces that you see promoting library programs and services now are the faces that we've used for the last few years. It's just that now that mode of communication is so much more important. So the library has done this great job of building on that, adding to it, making it more robust, and looking for new ways to innovate and continue to push out information.
Yeah, we're still compiling lots of important resources, book lists that will be helpful for people. You know, I think the staff was working on one that was around, you know, stress reduction, mindfulness, meditation, just kind of some self-care things that people might be needing now. That's something they're working on. I'm going to post. But we have all the important information you need. They're working on resources to share about how to connect in the community, about where, you know, if you need it, if you're having some food insecurity or had any questions about where to get important social services resources, we're going to post some information about that. So it's the reliable information, the things for entertainment or to help your at-home student or just your personal reading. All those resources are there.
I guess you have a lot of books online that people can access.
We do. We always had an opportunity for people to sign up for their library card online, but then it generally would prompt you to come in person and verify that and kind of connect and hear about our resources. But we expanded that so you can apply for a library card online if you don't already have one, and you have immediate access to all our online resources. So that includes like downloadable ebook, downloadable audio, there's movies, there's magazines. People don't always realize that we have magazines. We have all these great online learning resources too. So there's like language learning resources. There's tutoring or homework help resources for kids. There's things like Consumer Report, you know, for adults. We also have our great courses. We just did a Facebook post highlighting that. We have a collection of great courses and you can have access to that. That's a pretty cool thing to do if you're staying home.
Well, I saw your list of things and you mentioned Facebook events. What's a Facebook event?
That's one of our ways that we connect with some of our community is on Facebook, and we can do programming there. So we are able to do live story times on Facebook. So we do that on Tuesdays and Fridays at 10 a.m. So our children's librarians get on and do a live story time. So very, you know, similar to what you would have had at the library, just a little bit more virtually. We've gotten lots of great feedback on that. We're looking to record more of those too. We're trying to sort through. There's some copyright issues around reading books online and saving those videos. So we're sorting through that so we do it the right way. Then we're going to post some of that so you can go back anytime and look at those fun story time or other children's program videos.
Is there any way you can get actual paper books?
Right now, no.
No.
We were exploring that and we looked at other libraries. The whole thing with curbside pickup, we wanted a way to do it in a way that we knew would be safe for our staff and the public and to be sustainable, because that makes us turn on our whole holds operation and things like that. And that's a little complicated for us. So right now we think it's probably best.
So one thing I will add, while the Ames Public Library is not a source for actual paper books, I'm amazed to find the little free libraries are still very active all over the community. And if you're looking for something to do, you could search for the little free libraries, and they do have books, and it might be an opportunity to maybe exchange some of your own books and get rid of them that way. There's an adventure there in discovering the little free libraries, which is a national system, but also discovering them in your own community. Maybe something, as people are distancing and socially isolating, they could look for those libraries if they really desired those paper copies. It may not be exactly what they wanted. You're kind of at the mercy of what's the inventory in each little library, but it is kind of an adventure.
Yeah, it is. That is really a neat suggestion for people who like to have books in their hands.
Yeah, I understand there's a population that prefers the actual feeling the book and the paper in their hand, and moving over to digital is something that's challenging for me sometimes, but I am always caught when I discover a new little free library, and I always check out, well, what's available in this little free library? And I also look for them to deposit my books in when I'm done reading them. So the inventory changes.
By the way, I was seared to ask you, Sheila, if you have a recommendation for a book.
Ah, well, you know, I love audiobooks, so that might be something to keep in mind, too. If you're used to reading a book, you know, a physical book, you might give audio a try just because it's nice. Everyone likes to be read to, and some of the voices and production quality on are amazing. But right now, I'm listening to a book. It's an older one. It's one I personally own. It's called Full Catastrophe Living, and it's by Jon Kabat-Zinn. So that's J-O-N, Kabat is K-A-B-A-T hyphen Zinn, Z-I-N-N. And it's called Full Catastrophe Living, and it's about mindfulness meditation as a stress reduction and for, he's had a pain reduction, like stress reduction and pain clinic at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center. So it's kind of a proven technique. And I find his voice is incredibly soothing in itself. So as he talks through what it is, what this mindfulness meditation is and how it, you know, can help reduce stress, his own voice is soothing. I find the content incredibly interesting, but the, his voice itself is soothing to me too. So it's a two for one.
So, and that you can get that online.
You can. I did check. It's on our Hoopla site. So that's one that you can go online and get audio, downloadable ebooks or video all on that one place. And that one, you don't have to wait in a hold queue. You can just, it's readily available. You don't have to wait in a hold queue for that. So that's kind of nice.
Now, I'm just curious, how many card holders do you have?
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot. I don't know for certain. I'd have to get back to you with that. Oh, I know we have had more people sign up recently for those online cards. We've been watching that because we reached out to them. We made a note to see who had registered for online cards recently, and our customer accounts, the same people you see at the checkout or welcome desk there, they made calls to all those people to make sure that they were connecting okay. So I just gave them a quick call, said, hey, saw you registered. Are you able to get online okay? If you're having any trouble signing up or getting access to the downloadable books, you know, we can step you through that. Because, you know, you can call us. We're available to help people out. We're answering the phones 9 to 4 Monday through Friday at 515-239-5646. And our librarians will answer and help you out with. We're getting just a variety of different calls. You can also contact us. If you're on our webpage, you'll see there's all kinds of contact us links, but it's at www.amespubliclibrary.org/contact-us.
Now, so, if you just go on to the website, can you get access with just your regular number on your library card? You don't need to do anything special.
Yep. If you have a library card, you know, if you're using a new format or a new downloadable software for a first time, it might prompt you to do a username, which is just probably quick your name and a password. Sometimes they do that. But we have some quick guides, so don't be afraid of it. It's really easy, and once you do it once, you're fine. But we have some quick guides that step you through real easily.
You have lots of volunteers when you're open. How do you stay in touch with them, or are they involved at all?
Now? Yes, we have amazing volunteers. Right now, our volunteer coordinator, Sarah, she's amazing. She is reaching out to, she knows some of our regulars, because we have people who come every week or a couple times a week. And when it's their shift, she's giving them a call. So that's nice. Just kind of that check-in, because I think people are missing that human contact, and they appreciate getting the phone call. But we're also sending them out email updates too, so that they are getting some of the same information that we're pushing out other ways of just how to connect and things like that. And we'll keep an open mind, and maybe we'll find a way that there's somehow people can still volunteer with us virtually. So we'll get creative and keep our minds on that.
Well, I know that volunteers are extremely important in the library. Very important. In spite of you have all the wonderful staff you have, I know you need more.
They do. They help us do what we do. No doubt about it.
Well, thank you so much. This has been very helpful, I hope, to a lot of people. I'm going to have to check out that mindfulness.
There is a place on our website. We normally would send out our page one calendar, but right now we're sending that more out in a newsline format. So you can sign up to get that delivered to your email. If you go online to our website, amespubliclibrary.org, and you can sign up for that and email newsletter and just stay up to date that way too.
Wow. So there are many, many ways.
Many ways.
Well, thank you so much, Sheila.
And thank you.
Thank you, Susan, for bringing her in.
Yeah, it's really important to note that a lot of our programs and services have moved to a different format. They're still there. They're just not maybe the way that you're used to accessing them. We do have a Public Works open house right now that is virtual. It's a virtual open house regarding the Forward 45 transportation plan. So if you would go to cityofames.org, you could click on the link and walk through the Forward 45 transportation plan and add your comments. It's just another example of the ways that we're integrating technology into communicating with our residents. And so I just want to remind people that that's out there.
Thank you. Lots of news there. Lots of ways to stay connected and still enjoy and benefit in all our ways from the City of Ames and the Ames Public Library. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. And I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Pat Schlarbaum. We've just heard from Sheila Schofer, director of the Ames Public Library, who was brought to us by Susan Gliazda, Ames Public Relations Officer. The library has an important part to play in staying connected and engaged during self-isolation. But for many people, coping with the stresses of the COVID-19 emergency, the hardest part is psychological. Anxiety about loved ones and the stress of not being able to do ordinary things. After this break, we'll come back with Suzanne Silver, clinical psychologist, with some tips on how to cope with the stress of living through a pandemic. And do we have a music break? Because I think we, okay.
Just a broken man in a flight, running scared with all his devils, saying prayers all through the night. But mercy can't find him, not in the shadows where he calls, forsaking all his better angels. That's how every empire falls. The bells ring out on Sunday morning like echoes from another town.
15 years,
yeah.
And I specialized in trauma and have gone through a lot of trainings on how to help people's nervous systems.
Okay. Well, I guess all of our nervous systems are in bad shape now. Do you have any things you'd like to start out to, any tips to give us to cope?
Well, sure. And I know that there are a lot of articles out there right now on ways to cope. Some are some very practical pieces of advice about how to structure your day and to spend time outdoors to limit the news exposure that you get. And what I'd like to talk about maybe are some of the things that are more about how to manage the nervous system. And I think that most people could probably identify with a whole lot of different emotions that the situation brings up. And
Excuse me, Suzanne.
Yes.
I think we might have omitted your introduction.
So, okay.
This is Suzanne Zilber, clinical psychologist. And back to the show, Susan Franson, thank you.
So somebody forwarded me an article in Lancet that was published in February. And one concern we have is that the psychological impact of quarantine can last several months or years beyond the actual quarantine. Yes. And so it's really important that people do things for their psychological health now so that there isn't a residual after the quarantine is over. So the first thing I would suggest that people try to accomplish is what I would call dual awareness, which is that you have enough anxiety to comply with the precautions and to seek out resources. That emotions, if you think about the word, it's energy for movement. And the thing that's difficult is that the types of challenges we face now don't necessarily fit with running or fighting. But there are actions that we can take. And so if we use our emotions as information and aren't afraid of our emotions and say, okay, so I'm feeling this fear or this anger or this frustration. What does that mean I need to do right now? And then assess whether that is something you can do. And if you can't do something to redirect your attention to distract yourself or, you know, to seek out resources that are going to meet your needs. We can't be like totally anxiety free because we do have to be cautious. But then the second awareness is having compassion for yourself and for others. And I think something that can really support that is a sense of gratitude, gratitude for what's going okay in your life and gratitude for what others are doing to try to make this work for everybody. And then another thing we can do is have that sense of shared humanity, that this is a global problem, that human beings are sharing this experience, that it's difficult for everybody, and to assume a little bit of a radical acceptance and sort of a surrender to this is what's happening. So sort of trying to figure out when do I need to take action and when do I need to accept and surrender. And of course, that's in the Serenity Prayer that Alcoholics Anonymous has used effectively for years. One of the things I've appreciated in talking to people is they'll ask me, oh, what are you doing for self-care? And I think that's a sort of caring gesture, and that for yourself, you want to do your own self-care inventory. You know, what are the things that usually work for you? But also there's a whole lot of things out there that are based on neuroscience. That include guided imagery, that include meditation, that include exercise, all those things that we know about how to manage your nervous system. There is a really good resource called Health Journeys, and these are guided imagery resources that are developed by a psychologist in Cleveland, Ohio, and many of them have been researched at the Cleveland Clinic. And there's one they just came out with that's about resisting viruses. And the good news is that you can sort of listen to it a little bit online to decide if you like the man's voice and if you think it makes sense. And so I'm using that because there's a way that guided imagery speaks to our limbic system. And so you're listening and it may be giving you imagery that you think is silly, but actually it's probably working at a biological level. The other thing is if you ask somebody about their self-care, don't judge it. Don't start giving advice and say, well, do this or you should do more of that. Just listen and affirm what they're doing. And then if they want more suggestions, you can say, well, do you want any more resources? Then you can offer those. So we do need to expect and tolerate uncomfortable emotions and then not interpret that as being weak or that something's bad if you're having uncomfortable emotions. we have emotions for a reason as human beings, to protect ourselves and to help us affirm ourselves. And, you know, there's the what we call positive emotions, which are life affirming emotions. And then we have our life preserving emotions, which we might, we often label as our negative emotions. So when you notice, well, I'll talk about what to do with emotions in a moment. I also want to talk about that it's important that people not underestimate their ability to cope. I mean, one really important feature about human beings is that we adapt. And to sort of find that capacity in oneself to adapt. And you can think about, you know, when was the last time I faced a challenge like this? How did I cope with it? Did the things I did work? Have I prevailed? Can I put some confidence in myself for how I've managed in the past? Or do I need some new ways to cope that will be more effective? We can focus on our life's purpose and sources of meaning. And if you are struggling with a sense of purpose and meaning, there's one resource at authentichappiness.org. And this is a resource that was created by Martin Seligman from the positive psychology movement. And there's all these different types of inventories. And one of them is values. One of them is about your strengths. And if you take the character strengths inventory, it will give you this list of 24 strengths by your self-assessment. And then the top five, those are your signature strengths. And when you face a situation, you go, how could I use one of these or all of these five strengths to face this challenge right now? One of the things that we're facing clinically is people's fear of death, fear of other people dying. And I have suggested that people begin to write letters to each other about what they've appreciated, what they've positive experiences they've had, and what they're thankful for. And so have I run out of time now?
No, you...
Okay.
but you have a lot more. One thing that's, that I'd like you to touch on before you go is the quarantine backlash or whatever it is. What do you need to do to preserve yourself from having bad effects from being in quarantine?
So these negative effects of being in quarantine can be reduced by the things that I'm suggesting, and limiting news to 30 minutes a day unless your job requires you to be really up to date on the news. And of course, the in the article, what they said needs to happen is the government has to provide good information. We need adequate supplies. We need protection from financial loss. And it's really important that we not stigmatize people who have been exposed or who have had this infection. And we absolutely should not stigmatize healthcare workers. That the research showed that that was really very harmful. So we need to be thoughtful about, and then of course we're concerned about not stigmatizing people from Asian descent or who are, you know, that is not a helpful way to respond to quarantine. So we really need a lot from our government. They suggest that we not have a longer quarantine than is necessary, but I think in this case we see that there is going to be a long quarantine because of the possibility of a second wave of the infection. So we really need the government to step up with transparency and good information. And it does seem like Iowa is doing a good job of that. Then let me go back to emotions here for a moment. One of the methods that I was trained in for trauma treatment is called sensory motor psychotherapy. And this is where you put a lot of attention on your body sensations for information about what's going on with you emotionally and what needs your attention. And so the way that you do this is that first you notice, you can either notice an emotion or you can notice a body sensation and bring your full attention to that body sensation. Where are you feeling that? It could be a tightness. It could be a pulling. It could be a heaviness. Notice that. And then notice sort of what's the emotion that goes with that body sensation. And then ask yourself, if this emotion or body sensation could speak, what would it say? And sometimes people are surprised by what comes out of their mouths, you know, what it's telling them. But then that sort of is the information you need to know, like, oh, okay, I either need to take an action, or I need to change my perspective, or I need new information, or it'll give you a sense of where you need to put your attention. And it's just so important to be compassionate towards any emotion. And of course, we're going to be experiencing a lot of emotions. I think one way that people struggle is that we have, is through that having more than one emotion at once. So we have one part of us that wants to do this and another part of us that wants to do that. And that we're in this process of trying to reconcile between these competing emotions. And so it's important to honor that all the parts of ourselves have different roles to protect us or to keep us in connection. And we need to sort of help them all come together and cooperate. And that is from the internal family systems perspective. And there's a very good book on that called Self Therapy by Jay Early, if people are interested in that. I did contact the crisis hotline the other day. Yeah. It's CICS. And they said it is fine to call them to just talk about emotions related to the virus. You don't have to be suicidal to call them. And I think that, will your radio station be able to put those?
Yes, I was just going to say website? That information okay. will be on our website. So,
yes.
So people don't need to.
But what you can do is you can just call 211 and they will have an option in their menu for you to go to this hotline to talk to people. And the woman I talked to last night said the main thing people are worried about is that they will expose people they love to the virus. So there's a lot of anxiety about being the source of the virus for people that are important. And so that's, of course, a normal concern. And if you need to talk about that with somebody, this is a free resource. They also offer other formats like website chat and texting. Then there's also a warm line where you can talk to a trained peer volunteer. And that information, that phone number will also be on the KHOI website.
Yes, that will be. Oh, thank you so much, Suzanne.
Okay.
And so thanks very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Suzanne.
And many of us in Central Iowa are fortunate that we don't know anyone who has severe symptoms of COVID-19. But I heard about someone that many of our listeners may know, the singer-songwriter John Prine. And when I mentioned him to you, Pat, your reaction was personal. Could you tell us about John Prine and why he's important?
Yeah, there was a lot of concern over the weekend that singer-songwriter John Prine was hospitalized in New Mexico with COVID-19. And it was personal in reference to the virus, as Prine's illness is the first affliction of someone I know. And I guess it's personally because he's like a longtime friend or a family member. But John Prine's music included radio hits Flag to Cal, Paradise, Sam Stone, Donald and Lydia, Illegal Smile, and those were just on the first album in 1971. But yesterday, Prine's wife announced he is out of intensive care and on the mend. And in 1986 or so, John Prine performed at C.Y. Stevens with Bonnie Raitt, and we had a musical selection actually from that night and a fond memory. Here's Angel from Montgomery, a song he wrote in 1971 about old people, and he sings it with Bonnie Raitt.
I am an old woman named after my mother. My old man is another child. Just give me one thing I can hold on.
I was a young girl. I had me a cowboy. There weren't much to look at, just a free rambling land. But that was a long time. And no matter how I tried, the years just flow by like a broken down dam.
Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing that I can hold on to. To believe in this living is just a hard way to go.
There's flies in the kitchen. I can hear them buzzing. And I ain't done nothing since I woke up today.
Gonna work in the morning, come home in the evening, and have nothing to say. Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing I can hold on to believe in this living is just a hard way to go. To believe in this living is just a hard way to go.
I'm KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with Beth Larbaugh. Other voices you heard were Carolyn Raffensperger, Susan Wiazda, Sheila Schofer, and Suzanne Zilber. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories and those important numbers for the hotlines that Suzanne Zilber told us about. Local Talk was engineered by Mike Murphy. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Angel from Montgomery, sung by Bonnie Raitt and John Prine.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us. Or you can call if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. The yellow new member button is clearly marked.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and
we'll see you again
on the radio.